Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
32 leagues, 350 teams, 7 nights a week. There is nothing quite like college basketball. And no one covers it any better than he does. He's our college basketball insider, Gary Parrish of CBS Sports, only on the program.
That is right. It is March Madness NCAA tournament time, and it is time to talk to our man Gary Parrish, our college basketball insider, joins us here on our Sprint guest line. Gary, how are you, sir?
I'm good, but I will be honest. As I was filling out my bracket, it did come to my attention that I'm probably going to be unpopular on this Tuesday in your city, because I did end up having Kansas State and Kansas both losing in the round of 64.
Oh, wow. All right. Let's dive right in right there. Why? What do you love about the Anteaters? What do you love about Northeastern?
Well, let's start with Kansas State, UC Irvine. I explain this every year. When you cover the sport the way I cover the sport, or follow the sport the way you follow the sport, it becomes very difficult to rationalize picking upsets. Because, like, we've watched these teams all season. Why would I pick this clearly inferior team to beat this clearly superior team? So it does get kind of chalky, but I look for places to maybe try to pick an upset here or there. And what I usually look for is a team that has a number connected to its name, in other words, a seed connected to its name, that maybe was earned with a roster that might not be available to them, you know, when they play in this NCAA tournament. And obviously the uncertainty surrounding Dean Wade is a big deal. They're 5-3. Yes, co-Big 12 champ with this season, and that'll never go away. But they're just 5-3 without Dean Wade in the lineup. And when you combine that with the fact that, you know, Irvine's a 30-win team, they're a good offensive rebounding team, not having Dean would play into that. I think this is the type of place where we could see an upset. Certainly not guaranteeing it or anything, but if asked to pick an upset in the round of 64, I did have Irvine beating Kansas State.
How much have you ever known? I know you dive into the metrics. Has anyone ever told you, or have you looked up and seen that, you know, great offensive rebounding teams are usually teams that give up fast breaks too, right? They throw everyone at the glass, and so that leaves them susceptible to the breakouts going the other way. Is it as simple as that, or is there anybody that's good at crashing the glass while still having great defensive metrics? Because a lot of times what will hurt a team's defense is that they give up the fast break. How closely do those go hand in hand?
Well, that is interesting. You're exactly right. It is usually one or the other. You're not typically going to be a great offensive rebounding team if you are great at stopping transition, and vice versa, because basketball coaches usually commit to one or the other. Like, when you see a team of good athletes with decent size or good size that is terrible from an offensive rebounding percentage, that is usually by design. They just say, we're not worried about second chance opportunities. We're going to make sure nobody beats us in transition. And the opposite is true. When you see somebody that is an amazing offensive rebounding team from an offensive rebounding percentage perspective, it's usually by design. It's because they prioritize that. They decide that that's what they're going to be. North Carolina is usually a team that's a good offensive rebounding team. It's not necessarily, you know, anything other than Roy is committed to being that. So I'll tell you what, that's going to be a homework project for me. I will look into trying to find a team that is great from a defensive efficiency perspective, but also great from an offensive rebounding perspective, because when you commit to being one of those things, you usually give up a little bit of the other.
Yeah, and Roy wants to get out and run. He wants to get out and get on the break. He usually likes to have two bigs so they can get the board and then kick it out and get going. And he counts on two guys to crash the glass on the defensive side, and he's willing to leak everybody else out to get that run going. So he crashes hard everything on the offense, It's all about getting up the court and scoring. And, you know, I've tried to describe that to people, and they're like, well, we weren't very good at this, or we weren't very good at that. And I said, listen, these basketball coaches, anyone who's coached any sport at any level knows, like when you have a practice, there's never enough time. So you have to prioritize what you're going to be, and you can only be really good at a handful of things. And you're acknowledging, hey, we're not going to be that good over there. What I think's been really intriguing about Bruce Weber is he's always known as a guy that ran great sets, great motion offense. That's what he was when he came to K-State. Now he's got this team that's this dig-in defensive juggernaut, and it's not anything like what he used to be. Now, I can't tell you what his reputation was at Southern Illinois. Maybe that's what he was at Southern Illinois. But, you know, it's been impressive how Bruce Weber, and you've done a great job of describing all the great things and some great stories that you gave us about Bruce Weber. But what's impressed me is his versatility, which is a sign of really being a talented coach.
You know, there's no question. And one of the best at that is also the best at everything, and that's Mike Krzyzewski. Like, Mike, you know, a lot of coaches out there, they recruit to their style and they play it regardless of personnel. Mike Krzyzewski will – he'll play through bigs if he's got Jahlil Okafor. He'll play with guards when he's got Kyrie Irving. He'll play a different way when he's got the group he's got right now. You look at Mike's national championship teams, and I don't want to say they're all different than each other, but there's some very different basketball teams in terms of style of play. And I've talked to Mike about this before. He said, my job every year is to look at the talent I have available to me and then figure out what's the best way to win with these guys. I mean, it was just a year ago they were playing zone. Now they're playing nothing but man-to-man.
Yep.
And it's but most coaches don't do that. Like, Jim Boeheim's not going to get a recruiting class enrolled and then go, you know what, this team's better equipped to play man-to-man. We're going to play man-to-man. No, it's going to be zone every time. Mike really switches it up, and clearly, to your point, Bruce is equipped to do that as well. And I do think that is a sign of a gifted basketball coach. When you can look what's available to you for this one season and go, what's the best way to maximize what we can be in this one season? If it's different than what we did last year or different than what we might do next year, that's fine. Bruce can do that, and obviously Coach K as well.
All right. Do you believe that there are – there's a number of things I'd like to unpack there, but first let me ask you this. Do you believe that there are more than eight teams that can win this tournament?
No. I don't think anybody that's not a one or a two seed can win this tournament.
Okay.
If you go look in this season, the teams that are good right now are the teams that have been good pretty much all season. Like, I just randomly yesterday – went and looked when the AP poll updated. So we were in week 19. We are in week 19. And I went back just to week 13. Just, you know, scrolled down, clicked it, week 13. Basically the same teams. You know,
yeah.
The same teams that were good 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, are the same teams that are good right now. And so what that tells me is that we don't have anybody who got hot and jumped into the top five or six over the past 3 or 4 weeks. We don't have anybody who struggled early and then really got it going, unless you want to call Kentucky that. The teams that are the ones and the twos have been basically the best teams in the country this entire season, and I'm going to trust them to perform that way in this NCAA tournament. If you told me I can have the ones and the twos and you can have the rest of the field, who's going to have a national champion, I would trust my ones and twos over the threes, fours, five, six, and literally everybody else. Honestly, if you told me I could just have the ones, I might feel comfortable with it. I think one of the teams that has been the very best team in the country this season is going to be your national champion. But I don't believe we're going to look up on that second Monday night in April in Minneapolis and go, oh, wow, I'd have never thought this team could get here. I think by the time we get to that championship game, we're going to have two teams playing where we go, yeah, this makes sense. These were two of the teams that I always thought could get on this stage.
Yeah, we're talking to Gary Parrish, our college basketball insider. So I'd like to do this because I think this is something that's kind of interesting. And excuse me, I'm still trying to get over a cold here.
I understand.
Of these top eight coaches, I'm going to give you their name, and you give me like 30 seconds of what's at stake for their legacy. Because I was thinking about this, and there's some incredible things. And you pick. I'll go from the bottom to the top or the top to the bottom.
Totally up to you.
Okay, let's go bottom to the top. All right, so and I know this isn't the case because of the S-curve gets moved around and everything, but I'll go back through the S-curve and then back around. So the bottom two theoretically is Michigan State. Tom Izzo, one championship on his resume, tons of Final Fours. If he wins it, what's it do for his legacy?
Well, there's a big difference between being a one-time national champion and a two-time national champion. The list shortens drastically. And also from two to three, by the way.
Yes.
But from one to two, there's a whole bunch of guys that have won a national championship. I mean, right now, Tom Izzo's on the same list as Kevin Ollie, you know?
Yeah.
So you get to two, that list shortens up. Tom doesn't really need anything to establish himself as an all-time great or a Hall of Famer. He's already an all-time great and a Hall of Famer. But certainly being a two-time national champion is vastly different in terms of your reputation than just having one.
I think all the coaches that haven't won one certainly have more to gain than him. But of all the ones that have won one out of these eight, he has the most to gain because he's almost – it's almost like that one championship is looked at as the anomaly, and he's the Final Four guy that just kind of made it to a championship. All right, Rick Barnes. Would you say that Rick Barnes, John Beilein, and Mark Few at Gonzaga – are all kind of in that same boat? It's to break through and finally add the championship to what is already probably Hall of Fame careers, but they're missing that ring. They're the ones that have the most to gain. Is that fair?
I think that's true. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a little bit like a Heisman Trophy. You know, if you win the Heisman Trophy, or you know, in my profession, you know, just being an NBA All-Star, I work with a lot of former NBA players at CBS Sports Network. And so when we're in studio, every time Wally Szczerbiak is introduced, it's former NBA All-Star Wally Szczerbiak. He was an All-Star one time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's amazing. But, like, it's the way you're introduced. Johnny Manziel will forever be, no matter if he's a relevant football player again or not, he's going to be former Heisman Trophy winner Johnny Manziel. And if you are a national championship winning coach, it's a little bit like Oscar nominated or Oscar winner. You know, somebody can win an Oscar when they're 18 years old, make a movie when they're 68 years old, and on the poster it's going to say Oscar winner so-and-so. And I just think having that national championship added to your resume, and I guess this is a very simple way to put it, but it changes the way you're introduced for the rest of your life.
All right, and is Tony Bennett, the other guy who hasn't won one in this mix, has he got more or less to gain because of that loss? Is that always going to drag him down so he can't really gain that much? He's got to go win two championships? Because I remember when Boeheim became the first coach to be a number two seed and lose to Richmond. And I was on campus at Syracuse then, and everybody on campus wanted him fired. And – you know, I don't think that's the case of Virginia because they hadn't had the kind of success for as long as Jim Boeheim had at Syracuse. But it took a long time to live that down. It wasn't until 96, going back to the Final Four, that he really lived that down and the championship game before he lived it down. Tony Bennett, what's at stake for him?
I think he's probably got more at stake than anybody else because, you know, he is the first coach to ever lose to a 16 as a one seed. And that's going to forever be part of his resume. I don't think it changes what most people think of him because most people think of him as one of the best coaches in the world, and he is one of the best basketball coaches in the world. But every year that he doesn't go to a Final Four is another year that he's never been to a Final Four. And it's not like he hasn't had teams that are good enough. I thought it was interesting yesterday in Dayton, somebody pointed out to Belmont coach Rick Byrd that though Belmont's a trendy pick, Belmont is 0-7 all time in the NCAA tournament. Now, they haven't been a Division I school for ever. I think it only goes back maybe 20, 25 years. But it is true. For all the love Belmont gets, Belmont, Rick Byrd, they've never won an NCAA tournament game. And Rick Byrd's point was, I can't deny that, but every time we've been in the tournament, we're playing the top 25 team. You know, we've been an underdog every time based on our seed. So, like, I wish we could have upset somebody, but it's not like we've lost games we weren't supposed to lose. Virginia is vastly different. Virginia has lost lots of games that it was not supposed to lose. And even though you and I and most people can recognize Tony Bennett for what he is, until he wins, and I don't even mean a national championship, but like at least goes to a Final Four, that is his, the name association, you know, word association with Tony Bennett is always going to be great in the regular season, cannot get it done in the tournament. And so I think he's comfortable enough in his own skin where that probably doesn't keep him up at night. But it is a thing that he needs to try to erase. I think in sports, often people get bullet points connected to them that are not great. And for Tony Bennett, it's never been to a Final Four, even though he's had one seed after one seed after one seed. They need to break through. I'm not certain that they will, but I do think he's got more at stake than probably anybody else in this field, because everybody else in this field either isn't supposed to get there or has already gotten there.
All right, Calipari has a little more than Izzo to gain, one because of his, you know, the UMass and Memphis championships being taken away. I think in some people's eyes that'll fade that further into the background. But also just the pressure from the Kentucky fans. If he doesn't, at least get to a Final Four, they're going to start saying, well, it's been 4 years. I know, what an Arctic winter, right, since you've been there. And that championship back in 2012 is starting to get a long ways back there. Do you agree the pressure of Kentucky puts a little bit more for him to gain than maybe Izzo?
Yeah, I think Cal's pressure is all in-state pressure. It's not real from a national level. I don't think many people, not smart people, really question whether John Calipari is terrific at his job. But, you know, even this season, I know that it's easier to win with a bunch of five-star recruits than with something less than a bunch of five-star recruits. But, just because you get them doesn't mean that your team's going to be awesome. And when they started this thing with a 34-point loss on national television, to go from that to a team that on the final weekend of, you know, before Selection Sunday, had an opportunity to earn a number one seed in the NCAA tournament is a pretty remarkable coaching job. And I think most people around the country recognize that. But in that state, they do value championships and really nothing below that. And John has only won one national championship. Now, I would argue in his favor that since he's gotten to Kentucky, he's been to twice as many Final Fours as anybody else in the country, twice as many. But he's only got that one championship, and it is a thing in Kentucky, trust me. There are people there who question if he is the guy who can consistently hang banners inside Rupp Arena, because, you know, again, he's only got one to this point, and he's probably had, you know, many opportunities where there were times in the NCAA tournament where if you paused it, you'd go, okay, that team's supposed to win this national championship. The John Wall DeMarcus Cousins team, I thought, was the best team in the country in 2015. According to every metric, he had the best team in the country and yet still only won championships. So if he falls anywhere short of that, then it'll be another year where Kentucky fans thought they had the pieces to go cut nets, and they didn't do that at the Final Four. But it's not job pressure, but it is like, you've had the best roster in the country X amount of times, and how many championships do you have to show for it? Just one. That's a daily conversation in Kentucky.
All right, and I think maybe the guy who's got the most at stake is Roy Williams. I know that sounds funny. 9 Final Fours, 6 championship games, 3 championships. But you mentioned 2, you know, 1-2 and 2-3. 3-4 takes him to 3 guys, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's John Wooden, Mike Krzyzewski at 5, and then Adolph Rupp has 4. So if Roy Williams were to win this national championship,
guys, okay,
which is obviously very possible, then you know, he's tied for 3rd all time in men's college basketball with 4 national championships. And the way that he's done it lately, I think, has really helped his legacy quite a bit, because Roy, and I talked with him about this once upon a time, you know, Roy has had a reputation of being a guy who just got great players and won with them. And again, it's not automatic that if you have great players, you're going to win with them, but it's easier to do than to not do. And I will remember seeing Roy out in July, whether it was Peach Gym or anywhere else. And he was always in the gym very early, always in the gym late, always watching 15-year-olds, like really working in a way that the head coach at North Carolina probably doesn't have to work, like spending those hours in the gym. And I remember talking to him about it one time, and I said, I noticed that you're in these gyms, you know, at 16 and under games in the middle of the day when most coaches are going to get lunch or get a workout in or get a nap or whatever. You probably don't need to work that hard at North Carolina. you have to work that hard at North Carolina State. At North Carolina, you can come in late on kids and hey, say, hey, we're where Michael Jordan played and get these things done. And Roy's quote to me, I'll never forget it. He said, I know that I can win when I've got great players. I don't know if I can win if I don't. And I don't want to find out if I can. I have no interest in trying to find out if I can do what Bo Ryan did all those years or what Tony Bennett has done in some years, which is win with rosters that aren't super duper talented. He said, yeah, if people want to say I only win because I got great players, fine with me. But I'm going to keep getting great players because I don't want to find out if I could win with something less than that. And I say all that to say, Cam Johnson's just a guy. Luke May's just a guy. I mean, Nasir Little is obviously a five-star everything, and Kobe White has developed into one of the best freshmen in the country. But the last championship team and this team isn't something in the preseason you would have said has got the most NBA talent in the country or really anything close to that. Kobe White is maybe now a one-and-done guy, but really the only guaranteed first-round draft pick on Carolina's roster back in the preseason – was Nasir Little. And for Roy to take something less than what he had in 2005 or 2009 and turn it into a real championship contender, I think speaks to his ability, his underrated ability to actually be a really high-level basketball coach. And I think winning the last championship the way he did and really just doing what he's done over the past couple of years, while Duke and Kentucky are fighting over most of the one-and-done, he's just taking – less talented but more experienced teams and keeping them at the highest level of the sport. I think if he were able to add a fourth national championship, people would probably start to continue to look at him as something more than just a great recruiter, a great recruiter who also happens to be a pretty incredible basketball coach.
Think about this. Let me add on to what you're saying there. Over the last 4 years, I'm going to add a national championship to each guy's last 4 years. Coach Kays would say Sweet 16, Round of 32, Elite Eight, then national champion. Roy Williams will say lost in the championship game, champion, Round of 32, champion. He would also have – he and Villanova would have all the titles over the last 4 years, which I think also creates something. If he wins it, you make a case that he has passed Coach K right now. Like right now, he's better. He's certainly had more tournament success if North Carolina would run out and win this. And he would now be only one championship behind Coach K on that list. You'd almost have to be, you know, it's Coach K and everybody else, when you said it, the guy who's the best. But if Roy would win it this year, and with that run that he's got going on right now, and while everybody's talking about is he quitting because of knee surgeries and vertigo and everything else, he's actually the most dominant force in college basketball. Again, if he wins this year, it's why I think he has the most at stake in this.
Well, to your point, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me. Let me try to count them up real quick because I looked this up a couple weeks ago. Since Roy got to North Carolina, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 ACC regular season titles, either outright or at least a share. 9 in that same stretch. And we're going back to 2004. So this isn't some small sample size, 15 years. He has 9 ACC regular season titles. Mike Krzyzewski has 3 in that same span. It is undeniable that if you want to argue Mike Krzyzewski is the greatest of all time, and I would make that argument, I think it's a very sensible thing to do. But since Roy Williams got in the ACC, if the question is who has been more dominant in the ACC, Roy Williams or Mike Krzyzewski, it's really not even close. He's got 3 times as many ACC regular season titles.
Yeah, and he's winning the national championship as well, which was the knock against him. All right, I know this has nothing to do with the tournament, but Fred Hoiberg to Nebraska, is that – actually going to happen? And why is that happening? Why isn't he going someplace bigger?
It will only happen if he can't go someplace bigger, right? I mean, it will only happen if that's the best job that he can get. I do think Fred's ready to get back in. He doesn't want to spend a year off. So he will do what a lot of guys in his position do, which is take best job available. I think the mistake sometimes people make is that they assume every job's available. Well, every job might not be available to Fred Hoiberg. You know, only one guy – it's always interesting this time of the year. Coaching carousel gets going, and you get, you know, seven guys attached to each job. And so there's one guy who's attached to every job. UCLA's open. Ooh, Fred Hoiberg makes sense there. Arizona might open. Ooh, Fred Hoiberg makes sense there. LSU probably going to open. Ooh, Fred Hoiberg would make some sense there. Well, only one guy gets these jobs. I mean, this is kind of what's happened to Greg Marshall in recent years. It's like Texas opens. Greg would be great there. I agree, but only one guy can get the job, and Shocker got it. Indiana opens. Man, Greg Marshall would be great there. I agree. But, like, only one guy gets that job, and Archie Miller got that job. So Greg just is still at Wichita State and might retire there for, you know, who knows. But only one guy gets these jobs, and I'm not sure that at this moment Fred has a better opportunity on the table than Nebraska. My understanding is that he'd prefer to be in the NBA than in college, but there's, you know, I'm not certain he's going to have an NBA head coaching opportunity. And I'm confident he would rather be at UCLA than Nebraska for all the obvious reasons, but I'm not confident that UCLA is that he's their priority. And so I will, Nebraska's got tons of money and incredible facilities and, you know, no natural recruiting base, but Fred was able to get around that at Iowa State by taking transfer after transfer after transfer. So I do think it makes some sense. He's got history with that university. His grandfather maybe worked there, coached there at one point. So he's not unfamiliar with the area, but I don't think that Fred Hoiberg is going to turn down every job in America to go to Nebraska. I think if Fred Hoiberg's at Nebraska, you can trust that they threw incredible money at him, and it was, all things considered, the best job he could get.
We're talking with Gary Parrish here in the program. Did you simply chuckle when you heard the rumor about Bill Self to the Bulls?
Yeah, and you know, I know Bill's had NBA possibilities, opportunities before, but they were never great. And his line of thinking has always been, and like, I don't want to speak for Bill Self, but I just know his line of thinking has always been, I don't want to take a bad job. You know, these guys don't need money. They're making plenty of it. And in college, they have control of their rosters. Like, it's basically going to be impossible for Bill Self to ever have a bad basketball team at Kansas. But in the NBA, the opportunities he's been presented with have always been where it's impossible for him to do anything, at least in the short term, but lose, lose, lose. And that's a miserable way to live when you're used to winning as much as he's winning. Obviously, the elephant in the room is the FBI stuff, the NCAA stuff, and could he be trying to parachute out right now? And perhaps there's something to that. But simply put, I don't think Bill will be presented with the type of great opportunity that makes him want to jump to the NBA. And I don't think that his future is in such shambles at Kansas that he needs to get out. As we've talked about before, still to this day, you can believe whatever you want to believe about Bill and TJ Gasnola and Adidas, but Bill, there's no evidence, like hard evidence, tying him to anything. He does have plausible deniability. He can forever say that there's nothing in the transcripts between me and TJ that says buy players, cheat, break a rule, nothing like that. And TJ, under oath, testified that Bill knew nothing about his NCAA rules violations. You can believe that or not. I imagine Kansas fans do. Kansas State fans do not. But either way, all a successful coach in college needs is plausible deniability to keep his job, and that's why I've tried to explain to people over and over again, that's why there's a big difference between Will Wade and Bill Self. Will Wade has no plausible deniability. He's on a wiretap talking about cheating. Bill has plausible deniability, so I don't think he has to leave Kansas, and if he doesn't have to leave Kansas, I don't know why you'd leave Kansas for a bad Chicago Bulls job.
Yeah, I guess Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, those don't float your boat. I guess that's not a great job, which, by the way, I agree. Not the roster. I love when you get, and by the way, we're talking about college stars. Like, they got a collection. Like, what a great NCAA tournament team they'd be, and they're a turd in the NBA.
Well, that's the NBA. I mean, there was a time where before the Grizzlies got good, now they're not good again, but they had a stretch of seven straight playoff appearances. Prior to that, there would be times where you'd look at the Grizzlies starting lineup and you'd go, that's the number two pick, that's the number six pick, that's the number four pick, and they were terrible. I mean, you have to – it's a superstar league, and you better have more than one. I mean, like, Karl-Anthony Towns is widely regarded as one of the great talents in the world. never won anything in Minnesota. Anthony Davis is a top five player in the world, never won anything in New Orleans. You don't win with a bunch of good players or good prospects. You win with stars, and it's very difficult, with rare exception. The Grizzlies, as I'm talking through this, they didn't have a star, but they had a collection of players of veterans that worked well together. But still, they never won anything of real significance. If you're going to try to be, a good team in the NBA, you better have at least two top shelf guys. Otherwise, it's a difficult existence.
All right, Final Four time, brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. We'll move quickly. First of all, have you ever seen an anteater?
I've never personally seen an anteater, but I've Googled images of them, sure.
We were told in talking to the play-by-play voice at UC Irvine that they go into a tripodal stabbing position, and they can really jack you up. So be careful.
I'm going to stay away from them then. That's enough to keep me away.
All right. When does the tournament expand?
Just as soon as the people in charge of it decide, you know what, who are we kidding? We can make $1 billion more dollars by taking this up a notch. I hope it doesn't, because I think 68 is four more than what it ought to be. But I also understand that every decision made by college athletic power brokers is motivated by money. And eventually they're going to realize they already realize it, but eventually they're going to pull the trigger. I think one of two things happens. They'll expand to create more money, or they will go to what is essentially a Power Five tournament, break away, and stop splitting it between all the conferences and just split it between the five big boys.
Ooh, that's scary. I'm actually for expansion. Sometime we'll spend more time talking about my theory on that one. All right, Final Four, what do you got?
I've got Duke, Gonzaga, Tennessee, and North Carolina. So I've got 3-1 seeds and a 2 seed, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I think the ones and the twos have been, and maybe this goes without saying, but they've been not just the best teams in the country for a little while, but basically all season long. So I've got 3-1s and a 2. I've got Duke and Carolina playing for the first time ever in the NCAA tournament in the championship game, and Duke and Zion cutting nets in Minneapolis.
All right. And that was the next one. Who wins it all? Duke. You've got Duke winning it all. So we spent a lot of time talking about what it means for Roy, and in the end, screw it. It's the 6th one for Coach K.
Yeah, I just think they're the best team in the country. They're the most talented team in the country, and they've got the best player in the country. If you're looking for a reason not to pick Duke, they only shoot 30% from three-point range, and literally no team in the history of college basketball has even made a Final Four shooting that poorly from three-point range, much less win a national championship. So if they're going to go do this, they're going to do it in an unusual way relative to history, with four freshman starters, with a freshman point guard, and without shooting the ball well from three-point range. But it just speaks to their talent that they've been a bad three-point shooting team all season. It ain't like something that just happened, and they've only lost once when their four freshman starters were available and healthy like they are right now. So I don't think it's a sure thing, but I do believe that Duke is the obvious favorite for obvious reasons.
Gary, you're an absolute honest-to-God rock star. Get back to work, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, brother. I'll see you. Bye-bye.
All right, man. Gary Parrish, absolutely the best in the business when it comes to breaking down college basketball. Great, great stuff. We'll take a break, react to a couple of things he said next here in the program.
The Program on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Tavern, end of the hour answer.
Lay it on me, Kay.
Playing games tonight and tomorrow. Who was the first head coach to face an NCAA play-in winner?
It wasn't Bruce Weber. He lost one. The first one to face a play-in winner.
2001. Northwestern State was the team.
So it was a 1-16. That's right. Originally, they were all 16s.
Until 2011.
Roy.
Bill Self.
Nailed it.
As the head coach of the Fighting Illini, they faced Northwestern State.
Wow. Tavern, you can go check out the games. Great place to eat in their bar area. You can have some cocktails. Great happy hour. And enjoy some great food while you check out the games in the bar, Tavern in at Mission Farms and Tavern in the Village, tavernrestaurants.com, the location. for you to go online and make your reservations today, tavernrestaurants.com. Our thanks to Gary Parrish joining us there in the program. How about, is it kind of, are you kind of surprised at how that Roy resume all of a sudden gets real close to Coach K's?
Especially with the win this year.
If he wins this year.
If he wins this year. Yeah, if he wins this year, that's four. But, yeah, I had not been.
So he's not that close because he still wins. He needs to win six games.
He's only halfway there.
And win an NCAA tournament.
He's only halfway
tournament.
To the number of. No. K has five,
no, he has
right?
three and K has five.
Okay, so he.
So this would put him to four. One away and absolutely significantly more dominant in the ACC was when they were going head-to-head.
And those four would have come within the last 14, would have been four times in 15 years.
And let me also point out that he would have been runner-up champion, second-round champion over the last 4 years, playing for the championship three of 4 years, winning it two. Mm-hmm. And certainly he was, in not as much as he probably wants to admit, but he was party to this scandal, all in the wake of an academic scandal that had some kids not willing to go to Carolina. That's why I say when I say to Bruce Weber, like, you're just headed into your prime. Like, I think young kids want to go play for a grandfatherly-like coach. I'm not kidding you. I think Bob Huggins' best days may be in front of him. I know you say, like, well, what do you mean? He wasn't in this year. I mean, because I think he had one guy hurt, one guy ineligible.
This season was
and then
off the charts train wreck.
Another guy get hurt and then kick two other guys off the team. I think you may see his recruiting go up. Jim Calhoun won two titles in his 70s, right? Or 68 and 72, I think he was. Coach K's winning him in his 70s. Roy's in his late 60s right now. Bill Self's best days, barring any kind of scandal, any kind of confirmation of him having improprieties in this FBI investigation.
Or jumping.
Or leaving. Bill Self's best days are ahead of him. The new prime for coaches is 60s into 70s. Jay Wright's bucking the trend.
We started looking at that earlier this year with the top 20 poll, and like eight of the top 11 coaches were like 55 or 56 or more, and then of them were.
What are the ones and twos?
Let's see. Ones and twos are.
I'll give you the bracket. We'll start with.
I got the teams.
Coach K is
70-ish.
He's in the 70s.
71, yeah. Mark Few, no.
How old is he?
Let's see, Mark Few.
I bet he's older than you think.
Probably so.
56 for Few.
56.
Roy is 68, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right?
I think so, yeah.
Rick Barnes has got to be in his 60s.
Yeah, Roy Williams, 68. Let's see, Tony, we know Tony Bennett.
Rick Barnes is 64.
Tony Bennett is only.
Calipari's 60.
Mm-hmm.
Coach K, just to make it official, is 72. Roy is 68. I was right on that. Who's 66? John Beilein is 66.
And Tom Izzo is 64.
So how old was Bennett and how old was Few?
I typed in Tony Bennett. And forgot the to
singer.
Type in basketball, and I'm like, wow, Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett's 56. Mark Few is 56.
Tony Bennett is 49.
Okay.
One guy.
49, 56, a bunch of 60s, and a 72-year-old.
One guy under 50, and six of the eight are
60 or older.
60 or older.
I mean, that's the part. Now, part of that is you prove success that you end up at some of the top jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The resume building it takes to get the Carolina job or whoever's going to replace Coach K at Duke, you're going to need to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Is Roy's success head-to-head against Coach K in the ACC and the fact that he's been better at North Carolina, is that Roy got better after he left Kansas, or is that just how powerful North Carolina is? That Roy's maybe the fourth or fifth best coach in college basketball. He's clearly one of the best of all time. He's a Hall of Famer. You know, for Roy, I know Roy's still got a lot of friends in Lawrence. I am not a Roy hater. I hope I've proven that over the years. I got great respect for Roy. I genuinely appreciate and like Roy Williams. But, you know, I would entertain the possibility he's like the sixth, seventh best, and Carolina is without a doubt the best job in college basketball, better than Kentucky.
Yeah, I don't think it's any one thing. I think Carolina is a better spot than Kansas. Part of that's what's happened. But he was really good at, I mean, four Final Fours, two national championship games. It wasn't like he just found it at Carolina. That might be the difference in the two programs historically.
Well, right
Duke,
now,
as far as the domination of the
yeah,
ACC.
Yeah, but for all the regular season success for Bill Self has three Final Fours and two
title games.
One title, two title games. How does that compare to four? And I think the one championship trumps it all.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably better in the tournament than Roy, I guess. But not by that much,
didn't,
is he?
Roy didn't have the...
Roy had one
Bucknells,
more Final Four.
Bradleys, and VCUs. He didn't have the losing to a team nine spots lower than you when he was at... That's one thing he didn't have at Kansas. I mean, an upset for him was losing to Virginia in the, you know, Sweet 16 in 95. He didn't
in
really
Kemper.
Get knocked... Ed Kemper. Yeah, he didn't get... and even the big
Virginia
loss everyone talks
four,
about.
I think, by the way, weren't they?
I think a four or a five. And I think even the big loss everyone talks about, Arizona, was a 1-4. It wasn't a 1-8 or a 1-10. Those are the things that Bill that talked about, that 5-seed difference. Bill Self has like six of those.
Oh, I just was – when you're going back to Roy's time at KU, the only thing that's comparable to the losses to Bucknell and Bradley is, I guess, in 92 when they lost to UTEP.
Yeah,
which wasn't great.
1-8.
Yeah,
coming
off
a Final Four and then going to a Final Four the next year.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll give you the three guys that'll surprise you. There are three coaches that have done what in the last 5 years?
That three times in the last 5 years they've lost to a team seated five spots below them.
Right, the NCAA,
the official NCAA
tracks
update.
An upset as five spots lower than you. So losing to a three, while it's a upset by seed line, they call an actual honest to God upset five spots lower. There are three coaches that have been beaten by a team five spots lower than them three times in the last 5 years. Think about who those are next here in the program.
The program, weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, Mick Shaver's going to join us. We'll play The Feud coming up in our next segment. Curtis Siebold looking this up. Three coaches in the last 5 years that have lost to teams three times in the last 5 years that were seeded five seeds or more below them. Now, first of all, you got to be a fairly high seed to even qualify for this. So you must be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Those three coaches are, I threw out a number of different names. I thought maybe Coach K got there, maybe Tom Izzo, but no. Still an impressive list.
Sean Miller of Arizona did it each of the last 3 years. He's not in this tournament. Tony Bennett of Virginia did it three times.
And?
Jay Wright.
Wow.
In the last 5 years, he has either won the national championship or lost to a team seated five spots below. They're in a 6-11 game.
Lose to St. Mary's.
Or,
and he's out.
Or
there it is. St. Mary's. St. Mary's. Stick it, Frank. St. Mary's.
The burnt end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, who's the only coach who's lost twice as a one seed to a team seeded 10 or worse? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.